the only thing that there's just too little of. But the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another mountain. There are mountains and hillsides enough to climb. There are oceans and rivers enough to cross, enough to last till the end of time. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another meadow. There are cornfields and wheat fields enough to grow. There are sunbeams and moonbeams enough to shine. Oh, listen, Lord, if you want to know.
This is ACB Radio Mainstream, and I'm Jonathan Mosen. Last Tuesday, the world changed for all of us. It was early Wednesday morning here in the country in which I live, New Zealand, when a friend called. The news he had to tell was so unbelievable, I accused him of smoking something. But it wasn't a sick joke. And now we mourn, and we await the inevitable next chapter, the reprisals that will surely come. When I heard the news, I listened to radio and watched television for as much as I could. I checked on people that I knew in New York and Washington to make sure that they were okay. Then I had to catch a plane. In New Zealand, we've never had to go through any security check whatsoever for domestic flights. There were no X-ray machines, no security stop, no bag searches. When I boarded my flight, that's how it still was. When I returned just 48 hours later, the security people and the X-ray machines had arrived. The world changed for all of us last week. This program is a chance for the ACB Radio family to catch up. How are we all coping? How did we hear the news? Have you been touched personally by the devastation and the carnage? Of course, there is anger out there. Who couldn't be angry at such barbarism? But let's remember two things. Firstly, that ACB Radio, and therefore this program, records hits in nearly 70 countries. And secondly, that we must channel the anger to the right place. This is not a war against Islam. This is a war against fanaticism of all kinds. No doubt there'll be a range of perspectives, and indeed ACB Radio has already broadcast a program dealing with the spiritual questions that arise from this attack. Tomorrow, we will run a Canine Connections special focusing on last week's events. But going back to the spiritual issues for a moment, I do feel that some equal time is necessary on this question at this time. As someone who is not Christian and considers himself agnostic, I found the expressions of religious faith following this tragedy personally very hard to deal with. The phrase, "God bless America," has been used on countless occasions in the last few days. One wonders where God was when four planes were hijacked. The appearance of various religious leaders on CNN and other networks were, in my mind, singularly unimpressive. Larry King asked one such leader, "Where was God when the planes hit their target?" The leader's reply was, "God was the first on the scene." Well, clearly he arrived a bit late. Having said that, this is just my personal view, and if adherence to a religious belief somehow assists people to get through this time, despite religion having been the cause of so many acts of intolerance and conflict, then I guess it serves some useful purpose. Of course, we send our love, condolences, and best wishes to all who have been touched by this tragedy on the day the world changed. And we are going to speak to people who have been touched in various ways. We do have Steve Matsura joining us on the line from New York in just a moment, but I also want to talk to Marlena Lieberg, and we'll give her the first word, because Marlena is on a cell phone, and she's speaking, in fact, from Washington, D.C. How are you, Marlena?
Hi, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm well. And tell me how things are in D.C. It must be a very different D.C. from the last time you visited.
Yes, it is. There is talk that the Reagan National Airport will never open again. People are, you know, feeling just kind of, how do we go on with the day-to-day business of living when we live so close to the government centers and power?
You, of course, were affected because you were supposed to be catching a flight that day. Tell me a bit about how the day unfolded for you.
Well, I was going to Sacramento and on a business trip, and I got on the flight at, my flight was to take off at 6:45 a.m. Eastern, and we boarded the plane and were seated, and just as they were about to close the doors, someone came on the plane and announced in a way that I will never forget, exactly this way. He said, "Ladies and gentlemen, we are under a ground stop by order of the FAA." And my first thought was, what the heck is a ground stop? I never heard of that. And he then said, "The United States of America is under terrorist attack, and we cannot move the plane, and you cannot get off the plane until we know what's going on." So immediately everyone whipped out their cell phones and started calling and getting information in dribs and drabs. Someone said, "Oh, the World Trade Center got hit." Then someone else said, "No, the Pentagon got hit." And they finally came back on the plane, and still without giving us any information, they said, "Evacuate the aircraft immediately. Take what you have with you. Do not forget your luggage, and evacuate the airport." And everyone started walking out of the airport, out to the major highway. And I, at that point, had my trust level as a blind person in sort of trusting who the heck, who knows who to trust, was at zero. And I felt very strongly that I could not just follow the masses and walk onto some highway that I didn't know very much about. And I finally was able to get a hold of my husband on my cell phone, and after about an hour, they began letting vehicles into the airport 20 at a time, and it took him about an hour and a half to locate me and get me out of there. It was a scene of total, absolute confusion. Some people were crying. Some people were just laughing, just because you could feel it in their laughter that it was like, I have to do something, so I'm going to be funny. There were two people who were especially helpful to me, and one of them actually got all the way out to the highway and then turned around and came back to make sure that I was there, just as Gary came to get me. And it was just a feeling of being so attached to, because of having been on an airplane and, you know, sort of being a part of this thing closer than I ever want to be to any kind of disaster, and yet still not knowing what it was. And it wasn't until Gary found me that I learned, I thought that they took, Cessnas or something and did kamikaze deals into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. I had no idea that they hijacked four planes and took lives until he picked me up and told me that that's what had happened.
When you heard the announcement from the official at the airport, was there an audible reaction from passengers on the plane?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Was there an audible reaction from passengers on the plane when the guy came on board?
Oh, yes, yes. Everybody, it was different. My reaction, I threw my hands up to my face and I said, no, dear God, no. And people around me were just saying, like, oh, my God, no, what happened? And it was almost, there was almost a panic, but then people immediately started doing something, like getting out their cell phones, and that got them information, and that seemed to settle everybody back down again for a while.
And you've just taken another flight. Have you noticed any difference in terms of the way that the airports are functioning?
Yes. First of all, we can't check our bags curbside anymore. So we have to stand in a very long line now to get onto the plane, to get the bags checked. And when I got there, immediately someone came up to me and said, another passenger, and said, are you traveling by yourself? And I said, yes, I am. And this woman said, well, if you're going to Dulles, which is where I was going, I'm going there too, and I'd be glad to walk with you. I found that the general passenger was much more concerned about the welfare than usual, and the airlines were, I flew United, and they were very willing to do whatever needed to be done to make it work. The difference in how the airlines were today was really what struck me. They were very, very efficient with each person, but they took time with everyone, and they answered everyone's questions. The security was very different. I had my Braille note with me, and they took the Braille note, they took it out of the Handiworks case, which I shuddered. I thought, oh dear, now I have to get it back in there. But they took it out of the case and they wiped it down with a cloth of some sort. And when I asked them what that was about, they said that they were checking for the residue of explosives on any kind of battery-operated device. They did the same thing to my cell phone and my cassette machine. When I called the airport to talk to them about I was bringing some birthday gifts, and I had them wrapped, and they said some airports are, in fact, making you open your suitcase before you get on the plane. Don't wrap anything. That did not happen to me. I did not have to open my suitcase. But it was a very, very different experience. There were armed policemen at the ticket counter and at the security point, as well as at the gate to go down to the airplane. And that's very, very different for us.
And you have a lot of friends in D.C., having worked there in the past. Everybody that you know accounted for, and how are they doing?
Everyone I know, except for one person, and I intend to make sure that it's just that I haven't heard about one person. But everyone is doing fine, as well as can be expected. I mean, it's just a horrible time. It's just an unbelievable. I'll tell you something that is so weird. My seatmate on the airplane, I was in first class, and we were chatting, and he was a man probably about my age, and we were in the air for about an hour and a half, and I'd fallen asleep, and he tapped me and said, "Excuse me, can I get out?" And I said, "Oh yeah, sure." Well, he was gone for a long time, and at first I thought, "Golly, I wonder if he's ill. I hope he's all right." And then I thought, "Oh my God, what if he's a terrorist? What if?" And I mean, the most bizarre things go through your mind, and I wanted to make the flight attendant aware of my concern, but I didn't want the flight attendant to think I was a fool. And so I stepped up and went to the restroom myself and came back. I didn't see him anywhere. And flight attendant came over and I said, I'm awfully concerned about my seatmate. He's been gone for almost 45 minutes. And she said, "Oh, it's okay. He's a pilot for United. He's up in the cockpit." Well, I mean, my first thought, Jonathan, was, "What is he doing? What?" And there was an Arab gentleman on the flight, and two people had to make sure and tell me that there was someone in a turban and with a beard wearing a turban, and even this pilot said to me that he doesn't like to see Middle Eastern people around the airplanes, and he knows that that's bad. He knows that it's wrong, but it's kind of everyone's insides are changed. Everybody's focus is changed, and that's the way it is for the people here in D.C. that I've talked with. There was an article in the New York Times entitled "The Day Before Tuesday," and that's when life as we knew it stopped, and now this is a whole new thing.
What are people saying about the reprisals? Because one of the things that has been said on a number of occasions to me, and I have a lot of friends who like me are very interested in politics, is that really the world hasn't been on the brink to this extent since the Cuban Missile Crisis, in the sense that there are some pretty lunatic states out there with some very serious weapons. Is that the general feeling, that we haven't been this close to such a potentially dangerous situation since Cuban Missile Crisis in 62?
Yeah, from everyone that I've talked to, I would say absolutely that is the feeling. And people are having conversations like, Bosch, you know, they could infiltrate a food processing plant and inflict chemical warfare. You know, one vial of anthrax or something like that in a you know, Del Monte food processing plant would kill, you know, just hundreds and thousands of people who buy canned foods. And are we going to have to start drinking bottled water? And no one knows. That's the thing. It's like nobody really has we don't know what to expect. And so wondering aloud, what's next? And when can we relax this vigil? But what is the vigil? Nobody knows. We don't know what to look for or who to look at. And what is this thing called war when you don't know who or what it is?
You may have been in flight when this news came through, but CNN is reporting that Pakistan has gone in to tell the Taliban that they have 3 days, basically, to hand over bin Laden. Otherwise, they can expect very serious reprisals. So I guess a U.S. attack may be very imminent.
No, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
this is a very serious time, and I think one of the things that I appreciate, and I hope it holds true, and it's not just a knee-jerk reaction, but I appreciate very much how not only Americans but people all over the world are coming together in support of each other. I very much have a sense that people are there for us as we go through this. I mean, in the New York Times today, there was an article, "Please stop sending food. We have enough food and supplies in New York." I mean, that's a wonderful thing. People are putting flags out. And we put a flag out at our house. And, it, you know, at first I thought, well, is that hypocritical? I've never put a flag out before. But there's such a feeling of helplessness that if putting a flag out makes you feel better, then it's one thing you can do. It's just unbelievable.
Well, we are just, you're right, it is unbelievable. The whole thing is unbelievable. We're so delighted that you're okay, and I appreciate you using up so many cell minutes to have a chat to us, and you just take care of yourself.
Well, I shall, and I did hear you say that Steve was coming on next, and I know Steve can hear me.
He can talk to you even now.
Oh, Steve!
Yes, I'm right here, Marlena.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
We're very well. I have been watching it all unfold on television with the rest of the world. I am located in New York City. I'm on the island of Manhattan, which, for those of you who don't know, is very thin and narrow. It's only about 12 miles long and less than a mile wide. It's not as big as everybody seems to think, but we have a lot of tall buildings, and that's where we put everybody. My office building is 5 blocks away from the site, which everybody seems to like to call Ground Zero. I'm not fond of that term, but that's all right. My office building was closed. I narrowly missed being down there and narrowly missed having to walk home with a retirement-age guide dog by virtue of the fact that I decided to sleep in 15 minutes Tuesday morning.
That is, you know, there are so many stories about fateful decisions like that. Just before you go on, I'll just ask Marlena if she wants to say any more words so that she can log off her cell phone there.
I don't think so. I just want to say that, first of all, I'm awfully glad to hear your voice, Steve.
Thank you.
Amen.
and you know, whatever it is that people need to do to get through this, they should do it. Whether it's hang a flag or donate blood or whatever it is that for you is going to give you some additional strength. I mean, to me, this feels very much like a death. My insides are reacting very much the way they do when I lose a loved one, and I finally figured out that the two similarities are there's no turning back in either case. And so we just all need to hang in there together and keep the solidarity going, because this is only the beginning. And I appreciate your asking me to be on the program tonight, Jonathan.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And you take care, my dear. You're very special. And just make sure you look after yourself.
I shall. Thank you.
I'm going to.
Absolutely.
Okay, and Uncle Steve, you take care.
We will.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
So, yes, it is jolly good to hear your voice, Steve. It's quite hard to get into New York in terms of telecommunications at the moment. I had to try several carriers that I have access to before I stopped getting all circuits of busy messages, and I guess that some of those telecommunications are taking place because of emergency services, but more so these days, I guess, because people are just catching up, wanting to hear the voices of friends and loved ones.
That's true. After the second plane hit, phone system was basically useless for about 6 hours. You couldn't get a call in or out. Cell phone antennas, of course, had been knocked over. TV was off the air. If you didn't have cable, you had one television station. And, of course, all the AM radio stations are located, their transmitters and antennas are located in New Jersey. So that was all right. But all the local communications were off the air for a good long time.
So how did you actually hear the news? I take it you were too far away to hear the explosions?
Yes, I am. I'm located in the East 20s on the east side of Manhattan, and this occurred, oh, I would say right down on the west side of Manhattan. Manhattan narrows as it approaches its south end, and it doesn't exactly come to a point. It comes to kind of like a wedge shape, kind of like as if it were a piece of pie. On the outside, you know, a rounded sort of shape. And on the west side of that is the World Trade Complex. And on the east side of that is what is commonly referred to as the Wall Street area or the Financial District. And that's where I work. My building's proximity to the disaster site, as I said, was only 5 very short walking blocks. But it was across Broadway. And we were basically unaffected, except our services like computer connections and AC power were cut off. I woke up about 8:30, 25 to 9 on a Tuesday morning, and I have the radio on, as I always do, flipping around the station, see what the news is. And the sports report came on at 8:45, and that finished, and the traffic report came on at 8:48, and the guy in the helicopter said there are reports of some activity in the lower Manhattan area. There appears to be a plane. We don't know whether it's a commuter plane or a jet, or we don't know what kind of aircraft it is, but there appears to be something heading directly for the World Trade Center. And we're going to go down there and cover it. So off they went. All the TV news choppers went down. And somebody got some footage of the first planes hitting the first tower. And they still didn't know what kind of plane it was, because nobody had a really clear, good video shot of what the type of aircraft was. So I very quickly got on the phone to my mother, to let her know that I was all right and that I hadn't even left for work yet. She lives in another part of New York, north of New York City. And I said, turn on your TV and your radio. It's unbelievable. What's happening? She says, no, you must be kidding. I said, no. Why would I kid about a thing like this? Or, you know, why would I kid about anything like this? So she turns the television on, and she says, just stay where you are. Don't go into work. I said, no. If this is an accident, it's going to have all the streets tied up, and there's just, it's going to be incredible. I'm going to work from home today. So it was already pre-decided that I would call and work from home. I called my office mates, and I told them, and they said they had heard something on the radio, but they didn't hear any noise, and they didn't hear any sirens, and they didn't see any activity. Well, this was now about 9 o'clock, and of course at 9:03 or 9:05 thereabouts, when the second plane hit, Everybody was glued to their television. Everybody saw it. It was plain as day what kind of plane it was. And the rest, as they say, well, you know the rest.
What were your thoughts when that whole thing was unfolding?
Well, I'm a news hound and a news junkie, so my first thoughts were, how many radios can I turn on? How many scanners can I throw antennas out the window and listen? And how many different audio feeds can I find on the internet to get as much information as I can get from as many places as I can get it and understand it all as it's coming in? But I wound up having four things going at once. I had two scanners going and two TV news feeds going.
With such a clearly sensitive operation, though, was there much to hear on the scanner, or is most of that traffic encrypted these days?
As a matter of fact, in New York City, where you would think would be the encryption capital of the world, everything is wide open, clear, unprocessed audio. And the reason for that is New York just had a little scandal. I guess scandal is maybe the wrong word. A little problem, shall we say. They bought a very expensive digital radio system for the firemen. And when they put it in place, they found that it didn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is the reason that all of these digital systems are ultimately doomed. And that's because unless you have a clear shot at the repeater site, your digital signal, if it gets cut off, you get nothing. You don't get static. You don't get, you know, badly broken up audio. You get nothing.
Mm.
And apparently there was an incident with a fireman who was either killed or injured or almost killed or almost injured. I don't know the specifics. But because the communications were so bad, he didn't have some sort of information that he needed to stay clear of a particular site. And he went in, got himself hurt or killed. I don't really know which. But it was because of the radio system. If it had been analog, you know, he would have had one of those scratchy signals that we all know and love. But at least he would have been able to hear somebody say, get out of there or don't go in there. But with digital, it's all or nothing at all.
It must have been.
So they scrapped it.
Okay. It must have been remarkably chilling to listen to that traffic then, because so many of those officers were losing loved ones and clearly doing their best to rescue people. And that, in some ways, must have been even more difficult to hear than the news coverage itself.
Yes. Also, listening to the news people talk back to their officers off air was very difficult, because they were giving very graphic and dramatic descriptions of what they were seeing, which, of course, are toned down for the general air.
Did you, when you heard that communication, were some of the journalists just wondering how on earth they were going to manage to report this? Were you getting that feeling?
A couple of them really lost it, yes. A couple of them really lost it.
And they were being coached by the people back at the office?
Some were being coached. Some were being coached by and assisted by people they were with. Some of them just had to give up and give the microphone and camera over to a colleague who was with them, because they just couldn't do it. For a couple of minutes, they were just stunned. Everything came to like this grinding halt. A lot of people said it was like watching a movie.
Yeah. Although, I don't think any Hollywood director would have been able to get away with a plot like that. It would just have seemed so unlikely, so unfeasible.
Right. Well, that's the way most people felt in the very beginning was, no, this isn't really happening. This is, I'm obviously not seeing this right. It can't be this bad. It can't be like this. But it was.
Who gave the best media coverage in New York City?
NBC.
Now, it's interesting you say that, because when I was filling in for you on the Underground, on ACB Radio Interactive, I got a call from Dave Williams in the UK, and we were talking a bit about this, and he had access to NBC television, and was saying that he thought the whole thing was very sensational and grotesque, and that the reporters seemed to be making a nuisance of themselves. And he didn't dig it at all.
Well, it may have been a particular time that he was watching, but Americans love sensational journalism, so I have to agree with him that there was a bit of that going on. But people want to know. People want to know, even if it hurts. Even if it hurts a lot, people want to know. And I think that NBC has done about the best of giving details, however sensational or gruesome they might have been, of exactly what happened without what I would call the sensationalist extra commentary.
You mentioned the terrestrial TV channels being unavailable, all but one. The World Trade Center was the home of a number of TV masts. Did that include FM broadcasters as well?
TV masts, mostly. FM, hardly at all. Most of the FM is still on the Empire State Building.
Okay. Is there talk yet about what will become of that site?
Yes, there's a lot of talk. A lot of people say we should rebuild, and it should be bigger than better than ever, and we should make sure that the building is built a lot differently and along a lot different lines, and that somebody like Trump should be involved, because when Trump builds a building, there's nothing going to knock that thing down. Some people say it should be turned into a permanent monument. Others say that with real estate being what it is in New York, you can't possibly waste all that valuable real estate and make the whole thing a permanent monument, so maybe there should be a sharing of the space, some monument, memorial, and some building.
You certainly couldn't blame any New Yorker for not wanting to work on that site again, though, could you?
No. That was another question that was put to me when I spoke with some people earlier this morning. They said, if the site was rebuilt, would you visit it, and would you work there? Would I visit it? Probably. Would I work there? I would have to. It would have to be a very powerful inducement to work there.
What was so ironic about all this is that the internal security in that building was remarkable. You know, I've been to the top, right out to the top, and it's a heck of a business to get up there. You know, bag searches and scans, you know, with the little frisky machines like you get at...
Right, little up and down widgets.
Yeah. And yet, there it is.
No one ever thought that this would ever happen. The last time anything like this happened, the threat was definitely from inside.
Yes.
When they let off the truck bomb in the basement parking lot. But nobody ever dreamed anybody would be, I'm going to choose my words very carefully, fanatical enough to take a commuter plane loaded with 70, 80, 90 people, a wide-body jet, and use it as a guided missile.
Obviously, New Yorkers have come together, and everybody on all of the networks has talked about the spirit of New York, and that some Americans seem to frown on New York and think it's a very impersonal, loud kind of place, and everybody's been impressed with the sheer humanity of the response from all of New York.
What I've also been impressed with, Jonathan, is the fact that we have New York is about the biggest melting pot type city of any city in the world. I don't think that there's a single corner of the globe that's not represented in some small way, in some small neighborhood in the city of New York, which, of course, encompasses five boroughs. There's the borough. This is the only city I know of that's made up of five counties. Most counties have cities in them. This city has five counties in it, which is very strange. There's Manhattan, which I described before, which is a pretty small island. There's Brooklyn and Queens, which make up the western half of what is known as Long Island. There's the Bronx, which is on the mainland, so to speak. And then there's Staten Island, which is another island in the South Harbor, south of Manhattan, southwest, I believe, if my geography is right. And between those five places, there's 8, maybe 9 million people. So within 9 million people, I don't think there's a corner of the globe that's not represented in some way on some street somewhere. What I was very impressed with was the fact that people in New York did not start taking it into their own hands to seek out Arabic, Islamic, Muslim neighborhoods and start bashing. There has been absolutely none of that reported in the news. And I give New Yorkers a lot of credit for that.
Rudy Giuliani said that he had received reports of some harassment, including Muslims being spat on and various things like that.
I had heard that, but as a mass attack, there has been nothing organized.
Thank goodness.
You get your occasional, you know, like you just described, but there's been no organized, like nobody has taken it upon themselves to organize dozens of people and go out to Fresh Meadows, let's say, and start burning people's houses down because they're Arabic. Out in Fresh Meadows, it was very interesting, which is an Arabic community out in Queens, there was some celebrating after this happened.
Really?
Unfortunate to say, but there was. But New Yorkers didn't do anything about it. They were too busy worrying about what had happened to those to whom it had happened to, shall we say.
What about the nature of the response and where to from here? Is there a lot of talk about... Well, there's even been some talk of this is the lead-up to the Third World War, not necessarily using nuclear weapons, although obviously some states that one could consider rogue states may well have that potential, certainly have chemical warfare potential, but that there is a lot of speculation that we are heading into a possibly prolonged and possibly global conflict. What are people saying about that in New York?
Pretty much just what you said. People are ready to sign on, ready to help. They got guys lined up, ready to press the button, let me tell you.
Yeah, so there's a feeling that, a feeling of vengeance out there.
Yes, New Yorkers want it. From what I've been hearing on the talk shows, I would say 1 in 5 wants it badly. One in five callers want it very, very badly.
What do you think? I mean, as someone who is interested in politics and watches the news and has done for a long time, what do you think the nature of the response is likely to be?
I would say that Bush is going to be extremely careful and extremely thorough. And that's about as far as I can take it at the moment, because I haven't really thought much about how it's going to be, but I believe he's doing all the right things. The very first thing I believe that you have to do in a situation like this is you must follow the money, and you must find out where it came from and how it was spent, and you have to sort of learn backwards how this was put together. And once you learn backwards how it was put together and can analyze, you know, all of that, it would make it a lot easier to figure out what you need to strike at in order to make sure it doesn't recur. But I think that Bush is going to be merciless and quick.
One of the things that's...
Star Trek.
Yes, indeed. Well, one of the things that was a bit sad about our access to coverage of this was that with the recent changes in coverage of, or shall we say, relaying of terrestrial broadcasts over the internet, we couldn't get, for example, WABC and a number of the other stations that we used to get from New York on the internet. I think the only commercial radio station that was available was WBBR, in terms of news content anyway.
That's very interesting. I was talking with some people earlier this morning, and they said that they found WLS in Chicago was relaying ABC audio over the net.
Ah.
So it was out there. You just had to go looking for it
well,
in unusual places.
Well, that's an interesting long-handed way of getting it. Your DSL is still out, is it?
No, sir. It is back.
Oh, very good. Because
it is back. I published a message on all the ACB radio lists. All the people on ACB radio who need to know about it should have the word by now. What happened was, I guess we were in some way, my provider was had a point of presence in one of the buildings that went down, I don't know which one, and they moved it to another building. That building had power cut to it. They brought in a generator to keep the phone closet going with the routers and hubs and switches and whatever else they had in there. And then that building got made off limits, so they couldn't go back and refill the gasoline generator. And when the gas ran out, well, the phone closet went dark. So we just had to wait. And but they restored power to a lot of the buildings down there, and a lot of the buildings that were questionable are open again for people to get back into. So I don't know exactly what building this all took place in, but apparently it's to the point now where they've got the circuits back up and we're all connected and back online.
And the market's open again tomorrow. Wall Street will be busy. Are you heading back to the office tomorrow?
Well, let me say this about that. The markets are going to open, but the Amex is going to be sharing space with the NYSE because their building has pretty much been made uninhabitable for a while. I don't know how long it's going to be like that. Maybe 2 or 3 days until they get it cleaned up and stress tested. And how do you stress test a building? I always wondered about that.
Mm.
But that's the latest news, is that the two exchanges are going to be sharing the same physical space for a couple days. My office building, which, by the way, is the largest office building in New York in terms of square footage, not in terms of height or anything else, but in terms of amount of the rentable real estate inside, is supposedly going to open tomorrow. I don't know whether it's going to be opening for us workers or just for management or just for cleaning people. The hotline number that I have been calling all week hasn't given an update yet, and I logged into the company email system, and they gave no indication. They said all Chase Lower Manhattan facilities are closed until further notice. So I don't know what the deal is.
Hmm. Well, we're mighty glad
I do have the luxury of working right from where I'm sitting right now, and I'm going to take advantage of that.
Yes, it sounds like a very sensible idea, and it's really good to hear your voice, man. And I appreciate you sharing those thoughts with us. I know that I even had phone calls from people in New Zealand who listened to ACB radio who actually rang to ask me if I knew if you were okay.
My goodness.
So,
please spread the word. Mazura is right where he belongs.
We're pleased about that.
Glad to be here.
You take care and give our love to Marilyn as well, and we'll keep in touch.
And the best to Amanda and everyone in your house, too.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
Have a good evening, everybody.
See you later. That's Steve Matsura speaking from New York City. And the time has come for you to express your thoughts. If you'd like to give us a call and just have a chat, maybe you've got something on your mind you want to say, maybe you can tell us how you heard. Obviously, it's been said countless times over the last few days, and it'll be said again. Everybody will remember how they heard this news. And I must say, as a kind of an appendix to the comments I made at the beginning of the program, that when I did hear and I got this phone call, my wife asked, you know, what's going on? And I said to her, look, I'm going to turn on the TV and check, because if I've been the prank of a sick joke, it's not funny, and I wouldn't want to freak everybody out with it. And we turned the TV on, of course, there it all was. You couldn't watch anything else. If you would like to give us a call, the number is area code 212. That's a New York number, so hopefully you'll be able to get through. Area code 212 812 212-812-2800. That number is area code 212-812-2800. Then when Spiderphone answers, you'll be asked for a conference code, and that is 0480-5512. That conference code is 0480-5512. And if you need to, you can check the title bar in Winamp or RealPlayer and get that information from there. Just push Insert T if you're using JAWS, or Control Shift T if you're using Window Eyes, or whatever your window reading hotkey is, and we'll get to you. Let's go now to area code 631. Welcome to Blindline.
Good evening, Jonathan.
Hi, Richard. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing pretty good. As far as the World Tower goes, my brother's sister-in-law's sister's husband was on the 105th floor, so we're going to be going to have a service for him sometime this week.
I'm truly sorry to hear that.
Yeah, well, she's taking it pretty hard, so...
As you would, yeah. There are so many, obviously, casualties and stories of this kind. I hear Rudy Giuliani saying that the missing list is over 5,000 now, and it's just impossible to think of words of comfort, really.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Jonah.
Yeah, just to say that the death toll or the missing toll is now up above the 5,000 mark.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently that's what Rudy Giuliani had to say earlier today.
I think it was 5,100 or something like that.
And so where were you when you heard the news?
Well, I just, you know, woken up and I walked into the living room. My father had the TV on, whatever, and he was telling me about the plane that, like Steve was saying, the plane that was... you know, hit one of the twin towers, and of course we figured, well, could have been an accident or something. And then, right, you know, my father was watching it right live on TV. Here comes the second plane.
Yeah, just unbelievable. And so, what have you found to be the best coverage that you've been able to have access to?
Well, with my computer, I have my video card has a TV tuner in it, so I've been watching CNN on my computer. With, you know, while I'm on my computer, so I've been kind of basically watching TV with my computer.
Yeah, CNN's been its usual reliable self, I guess, and providing pretty good round-the-clock coverage. You're in New York State, aren't you?
Yes, I am. As a matter of fact, I'm about 30 minutes away from Queens.
Okay, so you... You are not at all far away, really, from where it all happened.
Yep.
Well.
Yeah, I'm not very far from the city at all. Probably a good half hour, 45 minutes, and I'll be in Queens.
Well, obviously, we're delighted to hear your voice and that you're right, and I can only express real condolences at the loss in your extended family, and I hope that you'll keep in touch, and we're thinking of everyone over there.
Yeah, I know that, Jonathan, and we know that the New Zealanders and the Aussies and you know, on the bottom of the globe are there, and I heard, I think the Australians, they lost about 100 people.
Yeah, it's such a massive event, such a horrible attack. Tony Blair was making the point in a very interesting interview that he did with Christiane Amanpour from CNN that actually this is the worst terrorist attack on British people, that through this event in New York they have lost more British lives in this incident than they have in any other terrorist incident.
I believe it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it. And as a matter of fact, I was just watching 60 Minutes, and of course my father is in the... He retired now, but he was a aircraft mechanic and involved in the aircraft industry. And basically, we knew about this problem with the airlines for good 20 years, and nothing has been done to rectify it.
What problem specifically? I mean, what do you mean, that things should be more secure on airlines, or is it a structural issue with the way that airplanes are built?
No, this, in other words, the security issue as far as not doing background checks for people that are working around the aircraft, that are servicing the aircraft, not having people who are doing the security. They're basically people that are working minimum wage, and they don't have the intelligence or the real training or anything to actually do you know, security, and just basically the whole infrastructure is really not there. It's not where it needs to be.
Well, there'll be no doubt a lot of discussion about those points in the ensuing weeks, and we'll look forward to talking with you again when I return from Thailand. When will I be back on the air next? About 3 weeks, 2 weeks from today.
Okay.
Yeah. You take care, Richard, and we'll be in touch.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye now. That's Richard Costa speaking to us from New York, just a little outside of the city. This is ACB Radio Mainstream, and it's the Blind Line program. You're welcome to give us a call. We'll give you that number again shortly, but let's take this call. Good, whatever it is, evening to you.
Good evening, Jonathan. It's Janine Stanley.
Hello, Janine. How are you?
We got through. I'm good.
Yes.
I finally got through. It is extremely hard to get a line in, so if people are trying to call and they're getting there are no lines available, it's not unusual. But I'm so glad to hear that several of our ACB radio family, like Steve and everyone else, are okay. That's such a relief.
Yes, it is.
Here in Ohio, it on one hand seems so far away, and on the other hand, I have to go to Long Island and was going to have to go through LaGuardia in 2 weeks. And after a sleepless night, I changed my flights and feel a little safer, but still, I don't know that we all feel very safe yet.
I know that it's really important for everybody to give the impression that the terrorists haven't won and will never win, and yet, in all truthfulness, people are so frightened, and that's what terrorism is all about. You know, even just flying on a domestic airplane here, and I'm not very happy about having to do so much international travel in the next 3 weeks, but the pilots came on the microphone on this reasonably large domestic flight that I was on and made some sort of comment about, well, this is the last time I'll be flying for this airline, and it turned out he was just saying that he was leaving the company. But when he started talking in a clearly unscripted way like that, my heart just, that's what's happening. You know, that it's tragic, the amount of fear that this has generated.
Well, I think I was not doing too badly, and I was doing crisis management for everybody else. You know, I'm running around, and I'm one of these people, I'm great in a crisis. My father was a fireman. We learned all the safety stuff as kids, you know. It's afterward that I fall apart, and probably Thursday evening. And I'll tell you, never have a pilot or a former pilot in your household when something like this happens, because you get all of the inside gory details from their point of view. And my husband is a former pilot, and he, you know, was doing that, well, this is what this means, and when we actually began to get more details about the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania, that's when I fell apart. I was okay until then. I was realizing it was terrible, it was tragic, but at that point I thought, you know, I fly so often and I just get on the plane and I sit down and I get my dog under the seat and I fall asleep usually, or I listen to a book and I don't even think about it. And, you know, this could be happening. And my husband had not experienced, it was almost akin to survivor guilt. He was saying, gee, you know, if I were ever on a plane like that, I could fly it. It would be the classic joke of the blind guy going to fly the plane, because I'm qualified. I could, if I could get to the cockpit, I could fly it. I could keep it from crashing. And I'm saying, but honey, you couldn't have flown it. You weren't there. You know, it's okay. It's all right. You know, and I'm thinking, I hope you never get to find out. But it was just such an odd reaction we both had. And unfortunately, you know, there are secondary casualties to this. My husband's mother was watching the news all day long on Tuesday. and suffered a heart attack early Wednesday morning and passed away. So,
gosh.
And he was not the only elderly person that I heard this happen to.
I'm so sorry.
We were all saying, because she was ill, and we were all saying maybe it was for the better, and she's in a better place right now, probably managing all of the people that have come up from the World Trade Center if we know her. But so it's been a very long week for us, and I'm preparing to go off to guide dog school on Long Island in 2 weeks, thinking it'll be all right, it'll be fine. Part of me really wants to go, and another part of me is terrified, not because it's New York, but because I am away from home. And so that's a really unusual sensation for me to be scared of going on a trip. So I hate to say it, but they did win temporarily. I don't think it's going to be temporary for long, but I'm really scared about war. I don't know what this is going to look like and what it's going to be like for everyone, you know, in America and around the world, because things are so uncertain. It's not like we can go fight a battle and things will be over. And what the next step is, as Marlena was saying, is the scary part, I think, for all of us.
Yeah, I was having a good, I received a very interesting message from somebody who said that they were pleased that this program was going to be on, making the comment that they personally felt that a strike against a country like Afghanistan was not appropriate, not the response. And that person said that they have been told that that's a very un-American response. And what do you think the appropriate response is?
Well, like Steve, I think it should be very careful and very, I guess the good military word is surgical. I don't think you can just go bomb an entire country. That doesn't solve anything. And we have no idea how vast the network is. It had to be a very sophisticated network of people to pull this off. And so just going in and randomly, if people are so fond in the Midwest of saying, oh, let's just go turn Afghanistan into a sheet of glass. Well, that's not going to help any. That's certainly not going to obliterate the problem, and it could make it even worse. I'm not exactly sure what to prepare for or what I want to happen. Oddly enough, I didn't feel a whole lot of anger and vengeance. It was more like, oh, no, what are we going to do? You know, let's not overreact. Let's make sure that we can take care of the matter, but do it with the least amount of damage to other innocent people.
Well, it looks like the connections to New York are freeing up, because we've got a few calls stacked up. Just before we go, though, tell us about Canine Connections tomorrow.
Right. Jonathan, I will tell you that was the most difficult piece of any kind of production I've ever had to put together.
Well done.
We pulled together a show about several of the guide dog teams that did escape from the World Trade Center and from the Pentagon. We've got some material on search and rescue dogs. Then we have a crisis counselor who is going to be talking about some of the issues that we're all facing now, her work with her guide dog in crisis situations, and just a couple of the little incidents that have come up. It was very tough to do. I did most of it on Friday and Saturday, so some of the information is now not necessarily outdated, but we've got new info. It's a good show, talks about good things, but boy, was it hard. And I hope you all tune in. It'll be 9 o'clock tomorrow evening. And we tried to get everybody in on it, but Friday was a pretty chaotic day. We hope you enjoy it. And we got some good folks to come along and share with us also what it's going to be like to travel with a guide dog. Travel's never going to be the same, or at least not the same for quite a while.
Mm.
And I think we need to realize that as much as we love our civil rights as Americans, this is not the time to be worried about how someone grabs your arm to assist you. There are a couple bigger things out there to be worried about.
Yes.
And that
could
be a whole other show, I think.
Well, that is Canine Connections at 1 Universal Time on Tuesday, which is Monday evening in the U.S., 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, and I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Right. Well, I appreciate you giving us the opportunity, Jonathan. We definitely hope that it will help folks.
Yeah, likewise.
Good and hopeful.
You take care of yourself, and I really appreciate you calling.
Well, thank you so much. You take care, too, and everyone else out there.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thanks, Janine. Bye-bye now. Area code 336, hello there.
Hi, Jonathan. It's Jess from North Carolina.
How are you?
Oh, doing good.
Excellent.
Very shocked and very concerned, but not panicked about this week. Jonathan, I really can't... Oh, man. I cannot really tell you how terrible this is over here. I mean, you know, I just feel like we've been... I never thought I'd hear myself say this, but I feel like we've been violated. And indeed we have. Because, you know, I mean, you get in a plane with 70 to 90 people on it, you get these terrorists that start stabbing people for no reason, for no apparent reason. And then, you know, for some reason, I don't know how they do it, but you know, they know enough to control the plane. They go into the cockpit, start controlling the plane, and bam, you ran the thing right into the Trade Center. And all these people that are doing nothing but traveling get killed for no reason. I mean, how do you explain that?
Yeah, how do you...
You know, I mean, those are some of the questions that I'm asking myself.
Because you're back at...
You know, it's just terrible. And that's the only word I can really describe it as, terrible.
You're back at school now, right?
Yeah, Tuesday, we've been doing, and as a matter of fact, all week, you know, in addition to work, but Tuesday, we have done nothing but watch the news ever since it came on. For the rest of the day, you know, normally it was a normal day, but after this tragedy struck, we did nothing but watch the news. But, God, I feel like I'm in a dream, and I can't, you know, it's an unescapable dream, if you will.
Yeah. What are the guys at school saying about it? How are they, what do they think should happen next, and how are they coping with it?
They say that Afghanistan, and yes, I have to agree with them, they say that Afghanistan is our main target and is the problem. Personally, from my point of view, I believe that Osama bin Laden is the problem, and you know, I mean, we should like diss him as soon as possible. But I don't know if you heard this, but yesterday it was confirmed, and I don't want to be, you know, the fearmonger out of people in this country, but yesterday it was confirmed we are going to war.
Yes.
We are indeed going to war, and Pakistan said, although we haven't been able to confirm the truth, if they're being true or if they're being just, you know, liars among us, it said we will be able to use their property. However, Afghanistan citizens have said, quote, unquote, if any citizen or any foreign country comes on us, we will attack. So, I mean, you know, And, I mean, you know, just the whole thing with all the airports in this whole nation, I mean, my God, when I heard that, I was like, man, I'm like, now it can't be possible that every single airport in this whole nation has just stopped. I mean, but, you know, it has, and, you know, I don't know, I just cannot believe this whole thing happened. And, you know, I mean, you hear about things like, Sweden, China, oh Lord, yeah, China. You hear about things like Sweden, China, and all these foreign countries are getting bombed, but now that I think it's us, I think two things come to mind. First, foreign countries will be paying more attention to us and more attention to our ways of what we're going to do and try to help us as soon as we can, you know, as soon as they can. And secondly, maybe they're going to take things from the negative approach and say, well, they had a government, you know, they had technology, why didn't they do something about it? And, you know, actually tonight they were talking about on the news that we have, you know, all these foreign country stuff, they have technology, very modern technology indeed for military work. And here we are stuck with the 76 law of 76, about military work, and still we're stuck with their technology, so it's time for a change. And, you know, I mean, it's just, I just cannot believe this whole thing happened.
Hmm.
Happened for no reason. Nobody deserved to die. You know, I mean, you know, who are we going to attack here, if anybody? That's what I want to know.
Just one final question, and that is that there is some suggestion that if things get sufficiently bad that they may bring back the draft. How do you feel about that as a younger person?
I really don't understand the question. Can you kind of explain a little bit?
In other words, that they will have a ballot and that people's names will be pretty much drawn at random to enlist with the army to serve their country.
Oh, Lord, I don't even want to go into that right now. I feel that, you know, all I want is for us to put away anybody that had to deal with this. And, you know, even the FBI has concocted a list of 18, they believe is the 18 people. 18 persons that are 18 terrorists, shall we say, that are responsible for this. And yes, he is on the top of my list. Well, Osama bin Laden is on the top of their list.
Oh, sure.
And they said they want him back. And they sent a message to his country saying, if you don't return this guy within 3 days, 3 days time, you are going to be under attack. And, you know, I mean, we're going to deal with you the worst anybody's ever done. And even George Bush, in the statement Tuesday afternoon, did not use the word prosecute. He said, we will hunt these countries down, and when we hunt them down and we find the correct people, we will punish those responsible for this act, and we will show the rest of this world we will pass this test. I mean, he didn't say prosecute, he said punish. And so I believe, you know, I think that justice should be done, can be done, and most certainly will be done.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts, and give your best to my folks as well, and all the best.
Oh, yes, you too.
Okay.
Take care, Jonathan.
Thanks, Jess. Bye now.
Bye.
There you go, this is Blind Line. Hello, area code 904, thank you for waiting.
Hi, Jonathan, this is Jim East from Florida. How you doing?
I'm well, Jim, nice to hear from you.
Great, thank you. Just a few comments. First off, I want to say thank you for all the help you are to our community.
Well, thank you.
And for hosting this show this evening. And I also wanted to say that 2 years ago, I went to the top of the World Trade Center, and it was the highest point in the United States, or the highest structure in the United States, that had an outdoor observation deck.
Yes.
And I felt the 110th floor, and I found it to be a very peaceful experience up there.
It's a bit cold up there, isn't it?
What's that?
It's a bit cold up there.
Well, I was there in the late spring, so it was
okay.
It wasn't bad. It was probably about 85 degrees.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is, you know, I thought when I was up there about the people that had died when the previous terrorist attack happened. And I just kind of, you know, gave a lot of thought to that while I was up there. But I really had planned to go back later in the future and just sit up there and listen to a talking book and relax, because I found it so tranquil to be above the bustling city and to be in such a calm place. And I was thinking about it this morning, you know, about how that place that I felt was so tranquil is no longer exists. I guess one of the things I wanted to tell people is that, number one, I think that I agree with what Gene Stanley said, that if the United States does anything, that it should be a surgical type of thing. It shouldn't be retribution or retaliation. It should be a seeking event for justice and not punishing or trying to condemn a whole country. I mean, I know we have people from all over the world listening to the show tonight, and really, as a country, the United States hasn't dealt with terror in terrorism as much as many other nations in this world. And I think that I kind of disagree with the last caller. He said maybe the other countries will pay attention to us. Well, I would hope that as the United States, as an American, I would hope I would pay more attention and be able to empathize with other nations when they have these type of events happen more often. You know, because we're kind of spoiled. We're surrounded by water on three sides for the most part. Yes, we do have a very large military, and as a result of that, the United States is insulated, and most people will remember, anyone that knows anything about history will realize that we were very much latecomers. Even your country got involved in the world wars long before we did.
Yeah, we got involved on day one, actually, yeah.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. The United States were the latecomers.
Mm.
So, I mean, I would hope that this event would draw the world closer together, help the world to develop closer ties, and I would hope that people would find more peaceful ways of dealing with conflict. You know, I don't understand, really, I haven't figured out why they picked the World Trade Center. Because to me, I mean, it was a business building. It wasn't actually a United States anything. It was just a business building.
I think they picked it, and this is what the commentators are saying, I think they picked it because of the symbolism that, the World Trade Center stands for. You know, all that is good about America. You know, a huge building, lots of commerce going on. It's a landmark. I think that it's the symbolism.
Right. Well, I just hope that as a country, I mean, they're already talking about firing the CIA director. And to me, if it's culpable negligence, which means that someone consciously made a mistake and or consciously did something wrong, then I think that person should be replaced. But it just to go on a witch hunt, or just to go after somebody's head, just to have someone to pin this on is wrong. And unfortunately, human nature is to do that, to place blame, you know, to attack with vengeance and to, you know, shoot first and ask questions later. And I hope that we're adult enough to really give some serious thought to things before we do them. And, you know, and I want to say one more thing, and then I'll quit. Excuse me. I heard the same thing the last caller said about all these reservists that are calling up, and I really hope that they don't go, you know, start the draft and go crazy on all this. I mean, I think that there's better ways of handling it than taking people away from their homes and their families and destroying a whole bunch of other lives, you know, just to make a point.
You see, but if they want Bin Laden badly enough and they want to actually get him out and he's not turned over by the Afghanis, they're actually going to have to go in and get him, aren't they? I mean, that they're going to have to use ground troops to go in and get him if they're not just going to pulverize the whole country, which hopefully they're not.
Right, and I would agree with that, but I don't think that you need to have 10,000 people over there to do that. I mean, we look at the way that we got Noriega. That was pretty easy. You know, and then I think that it's sad that Saddam Hussein is still around. But I hope that people in our society respect other cultures and realize that it's not a culture that's doing this, it's an individual.
Yes, yes, a fanatic. And you get fanatics in any religion.
I mean, a lot of people think that, and I'll say it, you know, before I make the statement, I consider myself to be a Christian, but a lot of people don't realize that the crusades of the Middle Ages were very violent.
Hmm.
And the people today that call themselves Christians would never do what was done during the crusades or the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah. Well, you've raised a whole bunch of really excellent points, Jim, and I appreciate you hanging on
to
share them. Thank you. Okay, bye-bye now. This is Blind Line on ACB Radio Mainstream, and the board is not quite as busy as it was, so if you were thinking about holding off, you won't have much wait if you give us a call now. Hi, thanks for waiting.
Hi, Jonathan, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, David.
Very nice sunny day in Tamanui. Is it sunny down in Whanganui?
Yeah, yes, it's beautiful here today. Lovely spring day.
That's good. Look, yeah, my heart goes out. So not only the Americans over there, but there's a lot of Kiwis in New York, I hear, and they always want to do one thing, and that's come home.
Yes, there are around about 1,000 New Zealanders in New York, and the consulate there has been going through a list. They've accounted for 900 odd of them, and they're not suggesting that the ones they haven't accounted for have all perished in this tragedy. It may just be that they're out of town on business, or perhaps they have old data. But yes, there are about 1,000 New Zealanders in New York.
Yeah, and also, because I don't know if you heard, but one New Zealander was on United Airlines.
Yeah.
I think it was 711 or something.
Yes, he
the one that hit the first tower.
Yes.
He was a New Zealander on that.
Yes. Yes. That's the only non-New Zealand casualty to date.
Let's think of that. They said there's about 5,097 or something missing, which is a hell of a lot of people. It's about the size of population of Tamanui, almost. Tamanui is about 6,000 odd people.
Yeah, yes, when you put it like that, it really does bring it home that that the number of people who we expect to have died in this dreadful tragedy have, it could populate a small town easily, even a small U.S. town.
What's Whanganui's population?
I think it's about 30,000 or something. It's quite a bit larger.
You get 50,000 working in one building, which probably cover the size of RTS Square or something.
It's a massive... Bigger. Massive building. I mean, very, very tall, obviously. And it's and Jim's point, the last caller's point, is absolutely right. Going up there, it is so peaceful. You just can't hear any traffic. It's a perfectly peaceful setting way up top there.
Yes. Well, have you been up the top?
Oh yes, yeah.
Well, it must be pretty cold up. Well, as you said, it was pretty cold up there.
I went up there. I went up there in February, so that's why it was cold.
It would have been the winter time over there.
Yeah, just towards the end of it. Yeah.
Yes,
well.
Yep.
I appreciate you calling in, and we'll talk to you again in a few weeks, no doubt.
Yes. It's just good to hear from you, Jonathan, and have a good time in Thailand, and it's good that Steve and Malena are okay.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Okay, have a good afternoon.
You too, Jonathan.
Okay, bye now.
Bye.
That's David calling from Tamarinui in New Zealand. And the board is now free, so if you were having difficulty getting hold of us before, I know there was a call there from Seattle that got tired of waiting, so maybe they can call back and you'll get straight on the air. The telephone number, which I haven't given for a wee while, is a New York number. It's area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And when you're asked to enter a conference code, courtesy of spiderphone.com, it is 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. And that information is in the title bar of your Real Player or your Winamp, and you can source it from there if you wish to have a chat with us. And we have a call from New York itself. Let's say good evening to you.
Hi there, Steve again.
Oh, welcome back. Welcome back.
I only called to apprise you of a piece of email I sent you. I don't know whether you check your email during the show or not.
No, I don't generally.
I sent you a piece of email with a song that you might like to play at the end of the show.
Oh, okay. Is it a surprise?
It could be if you want it to be. Otherwise, I'll tell you about it.
Well, tell me about it, yeah.
The song is by a Canadian Native American. That's the best way she can be described. She's part Indian, part French Canadian. Her name is Susan Aguacarca, and she has a song called OCM, and it's perfect. It's just a perfect song. I think you should wind up your program with it.
I will certainly take your recommendation and do that. Yeah, that sounds like I appreciate you sending it to me. I hope that sometimes I have trouble with attachments from you, so hopefully it's got to me in one piece.
Yeah, Well, is there anywhere else I can put it where you can grab it?
It's all right. I should be able to get... I'll grab it while I am talking to a person. I'm sure we'll get there. And if you keep listening, I'll mention if I haven't got it.
Very good, sir.
Well, thank you for that. And I take it there are no new developments to report. No word from the Pakistanis about how their meeting with the Taliban went.
No, I was hoping I'd hear by now, but nothing yet.
Okay. It's interesting to look at domain names associated with this. I've seen Taliban spelt two ways, with a T-A-L-E-B-A-N and also with an I. So, but apparently Taliban.com, spelt with an E, T-A-L-E-B-A-N.com, is registered to the Afghan mission to the United Nations, I believe, and I was reading a news report this morning that indicated that their site has been hacked on at least two occasions since the crash, with some pretty, you know, with a photo of Bin Laden put up there and some pretty choice language.
Oh,
geez. Yeah. Also, you can actually go to binladen.com and you can look at his site, which is the Bin Laden Group. He is involved in a whole range of businesses. I think a bit of telecommunications and stuff like that. So, you know, no talk of anything that we really want to find out about, of course. But
anyway, let me free your board.
All right.
I really didn't call to tie up your board. I just wanted to let you know that I sent you a song that you might like.
Excellent. I'll look forward to hearing it.
Good.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
See ya. That's Steve. And, the board is free, so I am getting word that it may be quite difficult to connect to New York. So what do they say in those commercials? If lines are busy, call later, but do call. And you will, if you can get through, get straight on the air right now, so you can minimize those long-distance charges. The telephone number is area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And the PIN, the conference code, 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. One of the things that I had on my list of things to talk about in terms of angles is as America looks ahead and plans for some kind of action to be taken, one wonders whether those who really feel strongly about this issue and believe that vast military action is appropriate, how can, what is the best way for a blind person to serve their country in that way? I have read in the past about how some blind people during previous wars who were very patriotic or politically inclined or whatever felt helpless because they wanted to serve their country in some sort of constructive way but couldn't go and fight. And so they really felt quite left out, very, very disabled at a time like that. And we have our area code 206 caller back. Hello there.
Hi, Jonathan. It's Sue Amateur.
Hello, Sue. Nice to hear from you.
Well, this has been quite a week.
Hasn't it, though?
I was interested to hear your interview with Steve.
Yeah, it's great that he's around with us still.
As far as we know, we didn't lose anybody either in New York or Washington. It's still a little hard to know, but... and I've read, I don't know if anybody mentioned to you, there was an interview with a blind man on Larry King Live.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw him.
You?
I thought Larry King's questions really got on my nerves, but anyway.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
It did, and somebody posted on the list that, you know, they thought that was pretty bad, and I posted back, and I said, yeah, it was, but I guess you got to overlook all that and just be glad that he got out. And then I heard about another guy. I think this was actually in an Australian newspaper. He was on the 70th floor, and he got out. And then on SportsCenter, one of the Washington Redskins, I think it's a tackle. Anyway, his brother works in another building. He's an insurance broker, and he got out. But then I heard from somebody that they're actually now is that there might be somebody missing, but they're not sure. They don't want to call the family.
Yeah. It would be hard not to be touched in some way, you know, even if it's through some very remote acquaintance, by this tragedy, really. It's on such a vast scale that everybody seems to know someone who's connected with it in some way.
Yeah, I mean, we being out here on the West Coast, it's not quite as much, but I mean, you know, everybody in the East knows people in the East, and we have one of our members is at Seeing Eye right now getting a dog, and she posted and said it was just, you know, they were just getting ready to go into New York. You know, they go in each day to work, and they brought him back. And of course, you know, Marlena was sitting on a plane, and they took her off the plane.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you were tuned in at the time we spoke to Marlena at the very beginning.
I heard the end of it, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize she was in Washington, D.C., so I decided to call her, and then Gary said, "No, she's in D.C., and I said, well, better her than me.
What do you expect to happen next, and what would you like to happen? I mean, are you in favor of a pretty sizable military response?
The logical part of me says that that's what probably should happen. The emotional part of me just feel so sad about all this that I don't know how to react to it. I mean, why do a lot of people have to die for what? You know what I mean? But that's why I've never understood war. I mean, I didn't understand Vietnam. I didn't. It's just inhumane.
Yeah.
I mean, we do have to respond, and I grant that. And I think Afghanistan is being very, very silly. I never could think of the guy's name. It must be a mental block. Ben Loudon is responsible for this or not. He certainly has done other things, and they shouldn't harbor him. But does that mean we should go over there and kill innocent people over there?
Yes, that's the dilemma. Although, I wonder whether, for some reason, the blind line callers are, how can I put it, more dovish than the average American population, because it seems that, looking at some of the polls that have come out, that a huge number of Americans appear to be in favor of quite sizable and decisive military action.
Yeah, I know they are, and I can appreciate that. It just seems, and I think probably what we're trying to assimilate here is that we have never had anything on our soil. Even World War II, you know, wasn't here. Vietnam wasn't here. We've always been somewhere else, even if we've been involved. So it's very hard for us to all of a sudden see this on our own soil. I mean, you certainly know in Britain, I mean, the bombings have gone on for years, Ireland, Europe, Far East, of course, they're no stranger to this, not to the extent of this action, obviously, but, you know, thousands of people have suffered and lost because of whatever reason this is. I mean, the logic escapes me, so I have a hard time with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts, Sue, and we'll work through it as best we know how.
Hey, I was interested. Was that Janine that called earlier?
Yes.
Okay, I missed. Now, does Kina and Companion take the place of Miller time tomorrow then?
Yeah.
Or have my days off?
Dennis is away tomorrow.
Okay.
And then in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be away in Thailand and then Sydney. So we're going to have a bit of a three-week break from live talk.
Oh, I see.
How will we cope? I'm hoping to do a program from Bangkok next week, but it will be, obviously we won't be able to take calls, so it will be interviews and things. So that could be quite interesting.
What the heck are you going there for?
Will Blind Union.
Okay. Yeah. You're such a nomad, Jonathan.
Oh, I know. Yeah, right now I really would rather not be.
I would hear you.
Yeah.
I would. I'm glad I don't have anywhere to fly to. So,
yeah.
Anyway, take care. I just wanted to share my thoughts and it's always good to hear your show.
Thanks, Sue. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
And have a safe trip.
Thank you. Bye
Bye-bye.
Now. And if Steve is listening, Steve, I've got my Microsoft Outlook 2000 doesn't like your multi-part message attachment thingies. So if we're going to get the song, maybe you could pop it up into the incoming directory of outofsight.org.nz, and I should be able to pick it up from there. Hopefully you might be able to do that for us. Let's go to area code 302, and welcome to Blindline.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Lynn from Delaware.
Hello, Lynn. Good to hear your voice.
Yes. And I just wanted to share a few thoughts. And I want to thank the international community for its support. I noticed on the list this week that there were condolences from many countries. And I, as an American, appreciate that very much. And I also appreciate the fact that no one complained about off-topic messages on the list when those messages were posted. At least I didn't see anyone complain about it. So,
well, I think we got one or two complaints on Blind Tech, but we put it to bed.
Yeah, well, I'm not on Blind Tech right now, but I did see several other lists, and I didn't see a whole lot of complaining about it, and I do appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as I said on the Blind Tech list, having rules is fine, but lacking compassion is another matter completely, and this is such an unprecedented event, you know.
As an American, just to give you an idea of how emotional this is for all of us, I think that most of us feel that those people who have perished and all of the people affected are our brothers and sisters and America's sons and daughters. And you were talking about the fact that the callers so far have been dovish, and I'm going to be the first one to say I'm not dovish.
Okay.
I think that we deserve revenge. I think we have been wounded severely, and we have a right to defend ourselves, just as any country would. I'm not exactly sure what the response should be, but I think that not doing anything sends the wrong message, certainly we don't want to see innocent people get killed. My question is, I think we are going to go to war in some way, shape, or form very soon, and I wonder if America has the will. Can America stomach the loss of life that you're going to see? I mean, I don't think this is going to be a clean war. I don't think it's going to be pretty. And I wonder, do we have the resolve? Are we willing to do what it takes? That's the thing that concerns me. I mean, if you decide to do something, you have to do it right, and you have to do it all the way. And, once the casualties start mounting, and are people going to say, are people going to all of a sudden not support the effort? And I guess that's my concern.
Just to expand on your concern a little bit, I'm wondering about the generational shift that has taken place in countries like the US and other Western countries. It was not difficult in the late 1930s, early 40s to find people who would voluntarily sign up to defend their country in the knowledge that they may well die for their country, and they were resigned to dying for their country because they loved it and it was out of a sense of duty to their country. I just wonder, with all of the cynicism that's crept in about political systems these days, I mean, this is a country after Watergate, after Vietnam, all of those things, how many people would actually be able to put their hand on their heart and say, I am willing to die for my country?
Well, that's exactly the point. I guess that's pretty much the point I'm making. Do we have the will? Do we have the stomach to go in and do what might be necessary, whatever that is? I'm not exactly sure what it is. And also, I guess the thing that we struggle with, too, is, you're talking about people who want to die. I mean, these are people that, they're martyred. If they die for their religion, that's why they crash planes into the World Trade Center. And How do you fight against people who really want to die?
But, yes, well, exactly. And that's what sort of worries me, if it comes down to a question of resolve here. Although, you know, I don't know how many suicide bombers there are around. Obviously there are a few, but from what I've been reading over the weekend, there's a misapprehension out there that somehow this is a characteristic of being Muslim, and from what I understand, in fact, the Quran has some very strict things to say about suicide. So, you know, and I'm no expert in the Quran at all. I've never read it, but just reading over the weekend what some clerical person from the Islamic faith was saying, that actually if you do commit suicide, the Quran says that you are doomed to repeat the way in which you committed suicide again and again for all eternity. So,
yeah, so it is very interesting. I think, I certainly hope that our leaders do the right thing, and that whatever we do is well thought out and well planned, and that we do it and, I guess, do what we say and mean it. I guess my concern is, if you're going to start it, you have to finish it. And it could get bloody, and it could get nasty, and it's been amazing to see this week the way that Americans have come together. So, I mean, I know where I work, people, you know, big shots and the cleaning people and everyone just basically is talking about it with each other, you know, black and white and you know, rich and poor. People are just, most people have something to say about it, and I just couldn't believe the emotion Tuesday. I mean, I had to leave work early, but they let us go home because people were just totally emotional beyond their ability to work, which I thought was amazing. I mean, you know, I work in a health facility, and we see death, you know, quite frequently. But this was just different, and then I wonder too. I mean, it's the way the country was shut down and people just went home. And sometimes there was a controversy because our university was trying to decide whether to cancel its game, its sports program. And then some people said, "Well, do we send a message to the terrorists that they can shut this country down, that they can keep us from going about our everyday life, versus the need to honor the dead and the need to sort of honor what happened?" So I think that's what people are grappling with now. You know, we need to get on with it, but how do we do that and still honor the dead and our own country?
There are all of those questions, aren't there? I mean, when is it time to have a laugh again,
right.
You know, all of those things. What's appropriate? I found myself even doing some work on interactive over the weekend, playing a song, or you know, and listening to the lyrics and thinking, gosh, you know, maybe this isn't the best song to play right now, and you're just so sensitized to it all right now.
Yeah, and I think in a crisis situation, certainly people need to grieve and they need to deal with their emotions, but there is a sense, I think, that people feel a need to somehow have some sense of normalcy. And the question is, how do you do that, especially with an impending possible war?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I just wanted to thank the international community. We had a lot of support, and you know, as an American, I really do appreciate that very much. And also, Jonathan, I wanted to, I know that your wife had you and your family were dealing with a crisis as well, and things turned out okay with your wife and her cancer. So I just wanted to say, you know, I was so happy to hear that.
Well,
thank
you.
All the bad news, I just was so happy to hear that. And my sister survived breast cancer.
Yeah,
every time she goes in for tests, we all sort of you know, hold our breath. So I know what, I sort of know what that's like.
Yes, and there are lots of people who are not as lucky as we were, and luckily for us, it just wasn't any cancer at all. It was a false alarm, and but you know, having that hanging over one is well, you'll know all about that. Yeah.
Yes, and yeah. And it's interesting. I'm sure, probably while these two things were going on concurrently, it sounds like, and I guess really when it comes down to it, you know. You sort of figure out what's really important.
Yes, you do.
I think that's what this crisis and crises like, you know, my sister and your wife dealt with. You sort of really reevaluate things and say, okay, what is the garbage in my life, and how do I get rid of it and really focus on what matters?
Yes.
And what's really important. And I guess what's really important is family and, you know, your country. And a lot of the other stuff, the Gary Condit and all the...
Oh, thank goodness Larry King's got something else to talk about now.
Yes, I agree.
Man. Well, thank you, Lynn. Always nice to hear from you, and you take care of yourself.
Okay, Jonathan.
Okay.
You do a great job.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
That's Lynn Schneider. And if you would like to give us a call, the board is free once again, and we do have, I don't know, about 10 minutes or so left. If you want to express your feelings, tell us how you heard the news. What do you think should happen next? And I am interested in people's thoughts about how they feel. If you're like Lynn, for example, and maybe I should have asked you this, if you feel strongly that action is warranted, and then if you go one step further and think, you know, you'd like to be a part of that in some way, what part can blind people play? Well, one of the things that I remember reading about was somebody who I had the pleasure of knowing quite well as president of the consumer organisation of blind people here in New Zealand, and Arthur Cushion is a name that will be familiar to many DXs. He was a great New Zealander, totally blind. And in the Second World War, he actually used to intercept all kinds of transmissions from enemy radio stations and provide information to the intelligence service and things. It was just something that he could do, and it really did make a contribution to the war effort. He was able to report on prisoners of war, let family members know that they were safe, all of those sorts of things. So there are ways, there are practical ways, in which blind people can assist in wartime. It's just amazing, isn't it? I'm just sitting here thinking, a week ago, doing this program, it was only a week ago, and we just had no inkling of this. Really does bring home that song about, in a New York minute, everything can change, doesn't it? Anyway, my number, if you wish to give us a call, and if you can get through, I accept, of course, that this is peak time in the US, and that circuits to New York are really hard to get hold of. I actually had difficulty getting in to do the show, but please keep trying, and we'll see if we can fill the last few minutes. I really appreciate people's thoughtfulness and the quality of the discussion that we've had, and if you'd like to contribute to it, we'd certainly love to have you. The number is area code 212-812-2800. That number, 212-812-2800. And when you're asked to enter a PIN, you can enter 04805512. That's a conference code of 04805512. And that will be the way that you can get into the Spiderphone system and have a chat with us. Now, tomorrow at 1 Universal Time, that's Monday evening in the US at 9 Eastern and 6 Pacific, you can hear Janine Stanley's Canine Connections special. And Janine's going to be talking to a range of people with a range of perspectives about service animals in general and the way in which they have played some sort of part in the rescue efforts, and also she will be speaking to some guide dog handlers who were affected by the events of last week. You might like to comment on it. I don't know if any of you saw the Larry King interview. Who was it who brought that up? Sue Amateur. Yeah. I saw that. And I did. I mean, I know that it's a probably trivial thing, but I think anyone who walks down 80 flights of stairs in a crisis like that and makes it out alive, I mean, that is a story. I don't know whether the blindness really comes into it, except that maybe there are people, well, there definitely are people out there who think the blind people can't climb stairs. But congratulations to Michael, I forget his last name, who made it out. And I understand that one thing that didn't come across on the Larry King interview was that the dog did suffer some damage to her paws with broken glass when she got him out of the trade centre. And so she's obviously well, and she's had a little bit of attention on that score. But it is a good story. Well, it looks as if either due to congestion issues or because of maybe we've all just burned ourselves out in terms of discussion on this, which is fine, that we are looking at wrapping it up. I'm just going to quickly see. I don't know whether we have had sufficient time for Steve to get us the song that he said was so appropriate, and I'd love to play it. We'll just see. Okay, it is coming through, but I'm not sure if we have all of it. Yeah, I think we do have it. Okay, so we'll give this a spin to end the program. And if it cuts off prematurely, it's just because... Let's go back to the phones, because we do have a call now. And this is a area code I haven't seen before. Area code 443, hello. Hello there. Well, what am I doing? Oh, that call's gone. Just as I was going to take it to air, so we'll take this one instead. This is an unknown caller. Hi, welcome to Blind Line.
Hey, Jonathan, it's Janine again. Just to get in here at the end of the program, I'd forgotten about that Larry King interview. Didn't see the interview, but read the transcript, and it just reaffirms my opinion of Larry King as a journalist, which isn't to say much, but... it was really sad that it became about the blindness and about this gentleman's ability to hold a job. We haven't interviewed Michael Hinkson, who's the gentleman who's on Larry King, but we will in the very near future, as well as some of the other folks. We did talk to a representative from his guide dog school, though, but we will be talking to Michael in the near future on Canine Connections. So, okay. And we'll be doing a whole lot better job than Larry King.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to be sort of snipey at a time like this, but I was really disappointed at the line of questioning. It was almost like, you know, how even the tone of voice that he was using to interview the guy, you know...
Yeah. I can only imagine in the gist of, you have a job? Why do you do that?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's just so insulting to me. Here's the guy trying to tell him, look, I'm working from, you know, my cell phone right now, trying to help people and do my job, which is rather ironic considering what his job is, making backup library systems for disaster recovery.
I bet he'll be furiously busy at the moment, actually.
I would think so.
Yeah.
I would think so. But I just, it's amazing to me. Great topic for another Blind Line or some other, when we get our live shows back and everybody's had a chance to absorb, is the way that sighted people came up to us and said, well, you can't really see the devastation. So, you know, this must not be as bad to you. We're going to deal with that tomorrow night on Canine Connection.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to hit someone.
luckily, I haven't been...
I got violent. It was just, how could you say that?
Yeah. I'm very pleased to say I have not had the misfortune to be surrounded by such people.
Yeah. Well, you know, it comes in surprising places. People you never thought would say something like that come out with it and then realize what they have said, but still it's out. So, and it's been talked about on some of the East lists.
Yeah.
You know, how do you respond?
I'll have to catch up with ACBL, actually. I haven't had a look at that for 2 or 3 days, so I imagine it's all happening there.
Yeah. Well, again, thanks for the chance for everyone to talk and those of us who could get in.
Yeah, thanks, Janine. I appreciate you calling.
Okay. Have fun.
Thanks.
You're going to Taiwan or Thailand?
Thailand.
Oh, if you were going to Taiwan, I think my husband would have to have words with you. He used to live there, and he absolutely loves it there.
Oh.
So, you know, anyone going there, he will stow away in your suitcase.
Gosh. You know, it's Thailand, and I'm looking forward to visiting Bangkok. It sounds like a wonderful place.
Well, it sounds quite exciting, and we'll be looking forward to hearing you.
Yeah, well, we're going to try and scan the bands a bit, show you what the radio is like in Thailand, see if we can talk to some interesting people, and put a show together for next week on the new ThinkPad, which I hope is waiting for me to play with when I get off the air here.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent, because I need all the help I can get with good sound cards for laptops.
Oh, okay.
If you can do a good main menu show on sound cards for laptops.
Yeah.
Channel, good sound cards.
I think the trick is.
My life so much happier.
I think the trick is WDM drivers for them. Actually, you know, getting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right, I'll look into that.
Alrighty, thank you, sir.
See you later.
Bye bye.
Bye. And that's where we wrap it up. I really appreciate everybody's calls. The ACB Radio family does come together, and it's been so heartening to get messages from people asking, you know, how are such and such, and hope everybody's all right. And the blindness list is a little community in itself. I suppose just before we play the song that Steve has recommended, the thought I want to leave you with is that having been to the top of the World Trade Center a little over a year ago, perhaps 18 months ago, and Heidi is still able to remember going up to the top of the World Trade Center. It's not something that you forget. And Heidi is 5 now, our little girl. And she saw what was going on TV, and somehow we had to explain that building that we had been to just doesn't exist anymore. And then she asked why, and we had to explain why. Because a plane, 2 planes, destroyed it. And then, of course, the next question is, well, why would someone do that? Why would someone do that naughty thing? And how do you answer that question when a 5-year-old asks it? To all of my friends and listeners in the States, I just wish you all the very best and know that we're thinking of you. Thanks for tuning in.
Oh, the fires of freedom. share